From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. These 2 hours, we are spending with the winners in local elections. Members of Congress, members of the New York State Assembly, the State Senate. And there weren't a lot of surprises, at least in our region. Incumbents did very well on a night that Republicans across the country did very well. Donald Trump, of course, winning the White House for a second time. The U.S. Senate will go to Republican control, and we are waiting to see what happens with the House of Representatives. It could end up in the Republican column as well. One race that came to mind for me was Northwest Ohio, where longtime member of Congress Marcy Kaptur, she won by double digits 2 years ago, and this time around, she's got about a 1,000-vote lead in a race that is just decimals. So it's races like that that are still counting. Republicans hoping to win control of the House. Hold control. Democrats hoping to take control and do what they can to thwart any Trump agenda. Well, going back to Congress is Joe Morelli. He won a dominant victory over the challenger, Greg Sadwick, the Republican there. 21-point victory for Congressman Morelli, who is on the line with us now. Congressman, thank you for making time for the program. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay. I want to start by asking you, Mr. Congressman, how surprised you are. I suppose a lot of Democrats are surprised at the overall results. How surprised are you at what has happened?
Well, I don't know that I'm surprised. I think people have been predicting a close race. I knew going in that it's going to be close. I also know that polling is getting harder and harder to do. I mean, I think people are difficult to get in touch with. So, I knew it was going to be hard fought. And obviously, there are a lot of things that people are concerned about and angry about. How they express themselves is ultimately up to them. And they clearly express themselves in a way that I would either not have chosen. I was a eager and enthusiastic supporter of the vice president. But that's how we drew up the system, and we have to have faith in the judgment of American voters.
Do you think, looking back, I mean, you and I talked about during the campaign that, that you did want to see President Biden step aside and allow the next generation of leadership to come forward. That happened pretty late in the process. Do you think if he had done this in the summer of 2023, that the result would have been different this time?
You know, it's always difficult to try to undo history and say, would it have been better if she had more time? I'm not sure time was the issue. I think, we find ourselves at a difficult moment in the nation's history. But I think a lot of this ultimately is about how American families are feeling. You know, I probably said this when I was on the program just a few weeks ago, Evan. You know, so many people in Washington and so many people in politics and government are so excited to be celebrities and so excited to be, at the center of attention. And it should have nothing to do with it. At the end of the day, the American people don't care about all of our pronouncements and all the politics that goes on in our state or nation's capital. They care about what goes on in their home, and which is exactly how it's supposed to be, by the way. And so when they sit around the table or they're in their, homes, they're worried about their jobs. They're worried about whether or not they have enough money to pay their bills. They worry about their kids' education. They worry about retiring in dignity. Those are all the things that they care about, and they don't care about the rest of it. So I think at this moment, given a lot of the disruptions in the world, they're feeling it. And, I would not have made the choice that they made, but I don't think it was a question of the vice president not having enough time to hone her message. I think she, said what she thought was in her heart to say. And just at this moment, for whatever reason, it wasn't the message Americans wanted to hear.
Conservative writer Lyman Stone writes today that one of the key takeaways for the Democratic Party must be that they should stop treating women like an interest group. He writes, it isn't that Democrats need to reach out to men, and especially young men. It's that publicly treating women as an interest group they are specially focused on is intrinsically alienating to men and especially young men. End quote. Do you agree with that?
Well, this is what I'll say about that. I think we have spent so much time in the last 6 months, the last year and beyond, prognosticating and thinking about the election and everybody trying to analyze what people feel and think, that it's hard to stop. Even with an election over, we continue to go through our, you know, rationale and our analysis. I think people should just catch their breath for a minute. I think before anybody tells anyone or gives advice on what the Democratic Party ought to do or the Republican Party or anything else, maybe we should just let this unfold a little. Maybe we should spend a little time with our own thoughts and just process this. There'll be a lot of time to talk about what the Democratic Party thinks and doesn't think and what we did wrong and didn't do wrong and what we did do right. And same is true of the Republican Party. I mean, these are things that are complex. And look, I think, if the writers talk about reproductive rights, I couldn't disagree with them more. If women and reproductive rights is, in his mind, an interest group, then I guess he's free to think what he wants. To me, it's a fundamental constitutional right that's at risk here, and that's why we talk about it. But there's a lot to unpack here over the next several weeks and months, and I'm sure there will be no shortage of people prepared to do it.
Can Democrats still win the House? I'm trying to get caught up on what I'm seeing here. What are you hearing about where the House is likely to end up?
You know, it's going to be a close margin, I think, either way. Right now, I think if you sort of assume that the three current vacancies would be filled by their predecessors, it would be 121 to 214. I think you're going to have another margin that's from three or four votes one way or another. Much of it now rides on, I think, California. And I think they have another batch of votes that they'll release at 2 o'clock. I think that'll give us a better idea of some of these really close races. But look, it's going to be a slim margin no matter what. We saw the Republican majority the last 2 years literally incapable of putting together a majority for almost anything. That'll change, I assume, with the president now being a Republican. He'll be able to reach in and demand a degree of discipline that wasn't didn't exist under Speaker Johnson. So, but it's going to be close. I mean, I think really close. And so it's still possible for the House have to go to Democratic hands. And probably even a little better the odds that it stays in Republican hands. But again, a very, very small margin.
And so if you're in the minority in the House, what are the actions that you'll be focused on and what would be some of the strategies?
Well, you know, first I'm going to have a great deal more seniority in the House Appropriations Committee. And I've been able to work with Republicans on the subcommittees I'm a part of and with the overall committee. So I'm going to continue to focus on trying to bring resources back to Rochester that will have an impact on our community. And I'm also going to continue to focus efforts on improving our democracy. I can't imagine Americans. I think it's a good idea for Elon Musk to write a $100 million check into our political system, nor Miriam Adelson to be able to write a $100 million check, or even people on the left who write big checks. I mean, we need to really start thinking about how to create a democracy that is more responsive to average citizens. I think that's part of the message. You know, if we're doing analysis, I think that's part of the message, that they're frustrated that the life they anticipated and the way they thought the rules worked isn't working well for them, and they don't have another way of expressing it, and they don't have a $100 million check to write. So we go to one side, then to the other side. I mean, you think about it, we had George Bush, then we had President Obama, then we had Donald Trump, then we had Joe Biden, then we have Donald Trump again. I mean, we're lurching back and forth. I think it represents some deeply disturbing feelings that the American public has about society and the way that the government is listening, or in the way that they're not listening. And so I'm going to, continue to work on bipartisanship. I have many friends on the other side of the aisle, and I'm going to continue to work to try to raise the profile of Rochester in our nation's capital and try to bring resources back home that I think can have an impact on the community.
I mean, if you're in the minority, they don't have to work with you at all. I mean, I guess there are certain issues maybe you get done, but are you concerned that the Democrats can be shut out?
No, I think with margins as small as there will be in the House, whether it's a 2 or 3 vote majority for the Republicans or the Democrats, that almost will certainly require bipartisanship. So would I rather have a committee chairmanship than to be the ranking Democrat of the committee? Sure. But nonetheless, I think there has to be, if we're going to function at all, if the president's going to be able to achieve any part of an agenda for the American people, he's going to have to figure out bipartisanship, not only in the House, but in the Senate. And you'll have a Senate majority, it almost seems certain that's a Republican majority, but they do things by consensus often, and they have the filibuster, so that will empower the minority at least to stop some of the more egregious things. So, even the last 2 years, what I found fascinating is the House Republicans would rather do nothing than to work with Democrats. I hope this changes their mind about how to proceed, but I can't, they're not going to listen to me. They're going to have to listen to their voters and listen to sort of commentary of people that they trust, and then we'll figure out how to go forward. But I think, most people expect there to be some bipartisanship, and I certainly hope there will be.
I got a couple more questions for Congressman Joe Morelli, who's generous with his time. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so on the subject of what you can and can't necessarily do legislatively, it looks like there's a number of agenda items that Donald Trump will try to pursue that might not actually come into a legislative sphere. RFK Jr. told NPR's Steve Inskeep this morning that he does expect to be given the keys to public health. And his first agenda goals will be to have fluoride and water banned by January 20th. He is going to pursue big-time changes in vaccines, and he wants to slash the FDA. I don't know that there's anything Congress can do about that, is there?
Well, I don't know that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. can do that unilaterally. I suspect this is, these are the interesting things about elections. They have consequences. Now, Americans may want to stop vaccinations, but I think scientists will tell you that vaccinations have pretty much rid the world, and certainly the United States, of diseases like polio and other diseases, measles. I mean, so it's no coincidence that the development of these vaccines led to the the saving of millions of lives. And so, but look, if that's what the American people ultimately want, it's not something I would support in any way. But there are consequences to it, so be prepared. And I think Donald Trump has said for sure that he appreciates loyalty above all else. And even if he doesn't agree with this as a public policy measure, maybe he feels that Robert Kennedy is owed this by his loyalty, and so he tries to put him in charge. But on those kinds of things where science completely disagrees with someone's suspicions or someone's superstition, I think we'll try to do everything we can to continue to safeguard the public interest. But, we'll see. Again, I'm not sure Trump actually said he's putting Robert Kennedy in charge of anything. That's been RFK Jr.'s pronouncements. I don't think the president elect has confirmed any of that, so we'll see.
One
thing I will say that I'm really concerned about is in the Trump administration, the first one, and everyone has sort of amnesia about it because he left office with a 38% approval rating, one of the lowest for any president in American history. So people have gotten amnesia about what that presidency was like. But even in that presidency, you had some people who were pretty highly regarded, who were thoughtful, who had, served our country in many different capacities. Almost to a person, they have spoken out against the president-elect and his abilities to lead. And I mean, all the criticism. So I'm not trying to, re-prosecute the campaign we just went through. But what I will say is I think the people that participated in his first administration aren't going to be anything like the people who are participating in his second administration.
Absolutely.
People, it's something just to watch out for and to pay attention to, because if anyone thinks the president in and of himself runs the government, then they have no real appreciation for the size and the scope of the federal government that they rely on. And there will be thousands of people necessary to run a government of 340 million people. So the people he brings in are going to be very important. And the president can only make, a handful of decisions in the course of a day. There'll be thousands of decisions that get made without his input necessarily. And if he's entrusting and empowering people who, believe in voodoo, then we're going to have some real problems. But, that's why you also have a Congress to keep that in check and to hopefully have a balance of power.
Real quick, what happens to Ukraine?
I don't know. Obviously, the former president has a long-time relationship with Vladimir Putin. Even some of his allies, like Elon Musk, apparently have been ongoing communications with President Putin. I assume that President Trump will try to sue for peace, which means he's going to take some of Ukraine and give it to the Russian military. And Putin may be able to flatter the former president and giving him what he wants. But I just warn people that, and I said this a couple of weeks ago on your show, before long they could be in Poland. And then the United States has a terrible and difficult choice to make, which is, are we going to defend NATO and we're going to live up to our obligations under the treaty, particularly Article 5 of the treaty, or are we going to literally retrench from world leadership and leave Europe and our allies susceptible and open to the threats of not only Putin, but President Xi in China? This is all the same thing. I mean, they're all part of the same effort to destroy democracy and destroy the rights and the freedoms that people have to select their own leaders. So, but you know what? The president-elect will find there will be pushback in the Senate because there are Republicans in the Senate and in the House who support President Zelensky and the Ukrainian people's efforts at thwarting the Russian aggression. So that'll be interesting. But again, there's a lot more that we don't know than that we do know.
All right, last question, and we'll let you go, Mr. Congressman. You are spending your time working on national issues, but of course, you spent a lot of time in Albany, and Republicans are pretty enthusiastic about what can happen in New York State. They look at Kamala Harris winning the state by only around 10 points. They look at the governor's margin over Lee Zeldin was around 5 points, and there's a gubernatorial campaign in 2 years. They look at the New York City boroughs moving 10 points to the right into more towards the Republican column, and they think they can get this state pretty purple. They think they can win the governor's office in 2026. How much do you look back at state politics and see possible change happening here?
Well, look, the governor's a friend, and I talk to her often, and I have a lot of friends still in Albany in leadership positions, so I stay close to it. And look, my part of my job is to represent not only Rochester but the state and the state's interests. So we'll see. I'm not convinced. I think it'll all depend, honestly, on how well if the Republicans have both the Senate and the House and the White House. It's going to be a referendum in 2 years on how well they're doing. So if they make a mess out of it, then I think people in the state will reject that politics. And believe me, people, they're going to make decisions on what's in front of them, not what happened 2 years prior. So look, I think it'll be a referendum. And then by the same token, I think the governor's trying to move the state forward and working with the legislature and trying to balance the needs of businesses and labor, of private interests and personal liberties versus sort of the more the things that the state wants to accomplish for all of these people. I mean, these are all balances, right? You have to make choices. But I think she's doing fine, and I think 2 years is an eternity. So if you ask me 6 days before the election in 2 years, I might have a better idea. But even that, I could be wrong. So that's the interesting thing about this. At the end of the day, people choose. We encourage them to go out and vote, and then we have to be willing to accept, even when we don't like it, what they tell us they want, and to accept the results. And that's maybe painful for those of us who would have liked to see it go a different way, but it requires soul searching on our part about what we're going to do on a moving forward basis.
Congressman Morelli, thank you for the time. You're always generous with it. We look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you, man. Talk to you soon.
That's Congressman Joe Morelli, wins by 20 points in his race. He is going back to Congress. And if you're just sort of tuning in to what we've been covering these 2 hours, we've been talking to many of the winners from election night. It was a big night across the country for Republicans, for the obvious reasons at the top of the ticket, but also taking the U.S. Senate, likely, although not done yet, to also take the House of Representatives. And so many different demographic categories moved rightward. So Republicans feeling really, really good about what they're doing. Now, in New York State, most of the incumbents did very well and won pretty easily. And we didn't see that big rightward shift in races like Congressman Morelli's or many of the others where Democrats are incumbents. Where the Republicans are incumbents at the state level, they did very well. And where there were some voter roll registration advantages, Republicans took advantage and dominated. And one of my next guest is one of those people who did exactly that. Andrea Bailey won a very comfortable victory and is going to the New York State Assembly. Andrea, welcome. Congratulations. How are you?
Thank you very much, Dawson and Evan, and thank you for having me.
We're all tired. We don't have much sleep here. We're doing our best here. So you win by almost 30 points, and you know yours is a district that's been represented by Republicans going forward. But is this what you expected? First of all,
it is, yes. But that doesn't take the anxiety
sure.
out of it
yeah.
either. You know, on election day, I do have to, you know, say that we saw record numbers as we saw across the state and as we saw across the nation with turnout. Coming out of early voting and absentees, that was very encouraging last night when we saw those numbers. So it is what we were expecting, but nonetheless, I am very grateful for everyone's support and everyone that, you know, did cast a vote to send me to Albany to be a voice for them. So.
When you look ahead now, we talked to your colleague Josh Jensen last hour, and he said, look, right now, Democrats still have the control of state government, and being a Republican is a challenge, and there's hard work that has to be done. But you look ahead, and a lot of the indicators have moved in good directions for Republicans. So, you know, that we've been talking about the presidential margin in the state, only around 10 points. You know, not a 25-point win. We've been talking about the way the New York City boroughs have moved rightward. Different demographic groups have moved rightward. Ultimately, when you look at 2 years from now, you'll be finishing a term, might be running for re-election. The Republican Party might be looking at the governor's office. What do you think your party can realistically achieve, Andrea?
Well, I think, honestly, you know, individuals in New York State are, you know, we have lost many residents, and we need to make New York State someplace that folks want to come to. And I believe that the voters realize that. You know, some of the legislation that we have seen come down through has not necessarily been received as favorable for everyone. And I think we need to get back to, you know, affordability and taking a look at what we are doing from a cost perspective. And, you know, some of the red tape that we have with businesses as businesses are leaving the state. And how do we invite those folks back in? So I would say, you know, in 2 years, anything is possible. But I don't have that, you know, that magic eight ball that's going to tell me what's going to play out.
Okay, I'm with you there, and I'm the worst person at predictions as well. So I make no predictions, but I think you know a lot of New Yorkers might forget that George Pataki, a Republican governor, that wasn't all that long ago. Things can change realistically, right? I mean, I don't think it's unrealistic for your party to have pretty high goals at this point in the state.
And I would agree with you there. I think that we are in a position to be able to, you know, move forward and look at obtaining additional positions within the state. And, you know, the governor's position may be one in likely is one that if we had the right candidate, you know, our last governor's race, the margins weren't that big. So I think we need to continue to move forward and listen to the people and listen to the voters and make sure that we are moving forward with them in mind.
Big night across the country for the Republican Party. Why do you think Donald Trump's victory ended up being so comfortable? What do you think are some of the driving factors there?
Just from, you know, I think it has to come down to cost of living in the economy. In addition to, you know, some of what we're seeing at the border, I definitely believe that has played into it as individuals have come into different areas of the country. And I think what we need to do is we need to start taking care of, you know, our residents here in New York State. We need to, you know, make not in New York State, but across the country, make investments in our veterans, in our older folks. And I feel that people feel that, from what I'm hearing, I guess, is that their needs are not necessarily being met. They are coming second to individuals who have come across the border illegally.
What are you most excited about in the next Trump administration?
So as far as what I'm most excited about, what I'm excited about is looking at what we can do from the economy. We need to look back at, you know, how do we continue to boost our economy? How do we continue to, you know, make the country a place that we feel safe and that folks want to come? And I just feel that he is going to be able to help us achieve that. And, you know, just looking forward to, honestly, what we're seeing, you know, in the Congress as well, and maybe moving forward.
So before I let you go, I just want to ask you a little bit about some of the political division we see in this country. And, you know, you're going to represent a district that is pretty heavily Republican, but certainly not all. Not all. And you said on this program, you're going to be someone who represents all of your constituents. You're going to work with anyone who wants to reach out to you. This is a country that has become more divided geographically. We see a lot more counties where there isn't a lot. It's just landslides in one direction or another. So I wonder how you approach this as an elected leader now. Do you feel that we are as divided as it feels sometimes? And if so, what is an antidote to some of that division?
So I do, Evan. I do feel that we are divided. But I do believe I also, possibly last time I was on your show, used the analogy that I think it's important that we have an open mind. And at the end of the day, we may disagree, but we can agree to disagree. I really live by the mindset that I don't believe anyone goes to their job or goes to do something or pursue something with the idea of going in and doing a mediocre job or going in and not protecting or, you know, protecting or speaking for those that they're representing. And I believe it's very important that we listen to everyone. We may not necessarily agree with those individuals. We may agree with them, but there is a need, and we need to try to find common ground to achieve what it is that we need to provide for our residents. And at the end of the day, there's going to have to be a little give and take there. But I believe that we need the checks and the balances in place, and we need to ask some of those tough questions. You know, right now we're in a supermajority in New York State, and I truly feel that we need to be asking the questions up front and really start, you know, maybe inviting folks to the table that they're going to have a differing opinion, but we need to listen to them because we probably could learn something from them as well.
Yeah, that's a great point to end on. You know, when I think about how we think of each other as citizens or how legislators think of each other, we could do the cartoonish villain idea that, well, the people who disagree with me are all terrible people and they're nefarious, or they have some different ideas. Some might be valuable. Some I might think are wildly incorrect, but I think that their intention is good with most or all things. How do you tend to think of the Democrats that you're going to work with? Do you think, by and large, that they want good things for people of the state? Do you think that there is any common ground you can find?
I think absolutely I do. When you look at it, even from a personal standpoint, I think many of us have friends and family members who may not, you know, politically align with us, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we can't find common ground to maintain our relationship and to move forward for whatever it is that we're working on. I do that every day currently right now. And at the end of the day, I believe our role in legislation is to represent the people who have voted for us, represent all the folks across New York State, and be a voice for them. And at the end of the day, we need to continue to advocate for that. And I am all for healthy debate. And unfortunately, I think sometimes we've scaled back from healthy debate because we might not like what someone else has to say, or we might fear what someone else says. But unfortunately, I think the only way that we can move forward together is have that healthy debate. And I think once you do that, you can learn something from someone else, and someone else can learn something from you.
Well, you have been generous with your time, and you are now an assembly member-elect. You're going to go to Albany, and I hope that occasionally you come back to this program, talk to our listeners, talk to us, and keep that communication going. I really appreciate that you're on the program today. I know everyone is tired and exhausted. Andrea, thank you so much for doing that. I look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you very much, Evan, for having me, and I look forward to talking to you later.
That's Andrea Bailey, a big victory for her, almost 30 points, and she will go to represent the New York State Assembly. We're going to take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and talk to another one of the winners from election night. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we continue our series of interviews with some of the winners from Election Day 2024 in both parties, some of the party leaders, some of the people involved in a lot of the organizing. We're going to talk about what happened, who won, who lost, and what the lessons are. Assembly member Jen Lunsford, Monroe County Clerk Jamie Romeo, among our guests. We'll talk with you Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Damon Meeks is going back to the New York State Assembly, winning a dominant and easy victory, almost a 40-point win over his opponent. And Assembly member Meeks is with us on the line now. First of all, congratulations. Thank you for making time. I hope you're getting some rest. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Evan. Good to talk to you again.
And this is what I've been asking Democrats who won. You won big. It always feels good to win an election. Your party really struggled nationally and didn't get the results you wanted. So what's the dominant emotion today? How are you feeling?
You know, I feel really good. I mean, you know, one of the things that I was taught and I was raised this way is that you have to be intentional in taking care of home first. And I think that, you know, Monroe County Democrats showed up and showed out at the polls. And I just want to say thank you to the voters who turned out in Monroe County and deemed it necessary to do so, recognizing the historical strides and the historical challenges as it relates to having such a right as it relates to voting.
So we're going to come back to the work that you're doing in Albany and some of the state dynamics in a moment here. A lot of Democrats woke up yesterday wondering if by the time they went to bed, we would have our first woman in the White House or our first president-elect who's a woman, a black woman, a person of color who, you know, is running in a race here that she was not even a candidate in 4 months ago. And it didn't happen. And I wonder, first of all, if you were surprised, if you expected Kamala Harris to win, and what your first takeaways to this result are.
You know, it's funny because I had someone ask me earlier today. They said, well, do you have any words of encouragement for those who went out and voted for Kamala? And, you know, my response was I really don't deem it necessary for, you know, how could I say? I guess I said I'm not sure if they needed words of encouragement because I truly deem it necessary for the American people to experience what's to come. You know, I think about us as a nation. We've been plagued by prejudice, by biases, by isms such as racism and sexism, simply to name two, and such ills and the need to feel superior to other groups, often resulting in going against one's own best interests. That's something that plagued us, you know. And, you know, eight years ago, I worked on Hillary Clinton's campaign, and I remember going over to Erie, Pennsylvania, and going door to door and talking to a number of middle-aged white women who were just opposed to Hillary running for president. And it was interesting that they would, you know, have such views. And especially for me growing up, I mean, I was accustomed to, growing up in a single parent household, but also some of my friends and family that grew up in two parent households, where mom was the CEO, the CEO, the CFO. I mean, you name it, COO. She made the house go round as it related to finances and making sure everything went accordingly as it related to running the household and also being there for the children. And I think that, sometimes people can have their opposition to the point where it goes against one's own self-interest. I'm hopeful that things will get better. I, challenge people to recognize politics as a it's not a spectator sport. I'll say that. It's not a spectator sport. We need people to continue to be actively engaged, irregardless of who is the president of the United States. We have to still get out and advocate for our needs as a people, as a state, and as a country, and let our advocacy be heard. I think that's absolutely necessary. And, the honorable ancestor Frederick Douglass said it best. He said, if there's no struggle, there's no progress. And I believe the years to come may bring about the struggle needed in order to create a more perfect union. I think back to 9/11, post 9/11, I mean, it was such a trying time, but we as Americans actually came together and we loved on each other. I don't care what your background was, post 9/11, we stood strong together and we spoke life into one another. And we lost sight of that at some point. And the level of divisiveness that we've seen over the past few years is just unacceptable. But I think that, we as a people, as a nation, we've had challenges, and I think that together we'll overcome them.
It sounds like you think for your fellow Democrats who are waking up feeling dispirited, burned out, and ready to kind of walk away from the effort in the future, that is not what you want to see happen.
Absolutely not. I think that, we have to just look at our history. And sometimes history repeats itself. Some of the same sentiment that, a number of us held as it related to this past election. I mean, we go back 52 years ago, it was the same sentiment. There was a call, there was a conference, a national conference that was called in 1972. And I'll just read this briefly. It stated, we are concerned that the reelection of Richard Nixon will almost certainly result in four more years of favored treatment for the rich and powerful, continued unemployment, frozen wages, high prices, appointment of additional members of the U.S. Supreme Court who are conservative and insensitive to the rights of workers, minorities, and the poor, more repression and restriction of civil liberties, and the reversal or total neglect of civil rights. Many across this country felt that same sentiment with our current president. However, the movement doesn't stop. The movement doesn't stop. We must continue to advocate and push for social justice. We must advocate and push for human rights, people rights, workers' rights, and the list goes on.
Assemblymember, let me also ask you about how you want your party and how you yourself plan to reach different demographics that really moved pretty far to the right in this particular election. So Donald Trump, in the early returns, they indicate that he won just over 25% of black men. He won Latino men outright. He won men 18 to 29 outright. Again, some of those numbers could change over time as we get the fuller picture. California takes forever to count because I don't know what they're doing out there. So there's a lot that we still have to see. But those early returns indicate young men especially have responded to the Republicans and are moving away from the Democratic Party. Why do you think that's happening? What has to happen for your party to reach those men and bring them into your party's camp?
Yeah, I think it's not so much what the party is saying. I think sometimes when we you know, like I mentioned before, the things that we're plagued with as a nation. It's not so much they're voting on account of, oh, I know these great things are going to happen for me based upon what this administration did before and what they're telling me they're going to do for me. You know, I remember having family and friends in parts of Pennsylvania that were looking forward to the steel mills reopening in parts of Pennsylvania because that was a promise that was made when Trump first ran for office. That hasn't happened till this day. But when individuals or people have their different biases or their prejudice, you know, and look at, you know, whether or not they feel certain people should be in certain roles, that plays a part in their vote. That plays a part in their vote. So I don't think it was so much the promise of what Trump would bring to the American people. I think that there was just things that he plays on to his benefit, to get in an office and continue to advocate and pass policy to the benefit of the ultra-rich, while groups of poor people, groups of working class and struggling people feel a need to feel above or superior to other groups. And that is what plagues us as a nation, and hopefully we'll open our eyes to that someday.
Are you worried about the Democrats' ability to reach men, though? I mean, like, do you think that this is going to continue to be a problem?
I don't think so much it will continue to be a problem. I think that, as I mentioned, what we're plagued with. So if there was a male candidate that was running opposed to a female candidate, you probably would have had more men that would have voted and would have felt okay because it's a man running for the position. What I'm speaking to is how we're plagued with our biases. That's what I'm speaking to. So if there was a man running for the office on a Democratic ticket, it may have been different. Mm. Do I agree with that? Absolutely not.
Yeah. There's no way to know, but I take the point that you're making. Well, let me turn to some state politics now. The Democrats have done very well in New York State. And, you know, you go back to Albany with a party that has power there. Are you concerned, though, that the Trump wave that moved just about every county to the right in some way, even moved, you know, New York strongholds further right than they've been in decades, the New York City boroughs, among others, does this portend a Republican Party eventually winning the governor's race in a couple of years, trying to actually carve into these majorities or win the legislature? Do you think your party's in trouble on the state level in any way?
I don't believe we're in trouble at the state level. I think that, you know, we as a party have to be mindful of our position and what we stand on. You know, as an incumbent, you know, and running for office, I don't operate by doing fear mongering and trying to scare people. I do share statistical data. I do speak to our victories and the improvements that we've made. And I think that's something that the Dems have to be mindful of, is standing on their democratic principles, showing the strides that we made to the benefit of the people in which we serve, and not get roped up in the fear-mongering in the games, the political games. You know, I said we have to continue to be committed to bringing about solutions to problems that plague us versus simply trying to win an argument in a moment. And we've seen that with my opponent. We've seen it with the former chief of police from Gates. I mean, you know, the constant fear mongering. But, you know, I borrow a quote from the rapper Jay-Z, men lie, women lie, but the numbers don't. And I'm thankful that the members of this community recognize what's at stake and committed to voting for a strong delegation that has been able to move mountains and get things done to the benefit of Rochester and Monroe County, as well as the state of New York.
What is on the agenda that has to get done in 2025 when you're going back for another term?
We have to be mindful in making major strides to the benefit of the next generation, those who are coming behind us. You know, when we look at education, the challenges as it relates to reading and comprehension, There's some major challenges. Last year, we were able to secure $10 million to increase reading programs across school districts across the state of New York. And we're not stopping there. We want to make sure that all our children are reading at grade level and beyond. And then post-high school, assuring that children in our Big Five school districts, along with those who are in the surrounding suburbs and rural areas. Most of the surrounding suburbs and rural areas have access to programs such as BOCES, where that's not the case with our larger school districts. So we want to be intentional in assuring that we're expanding career technology education so students, upon graduating from high school, will have a skilled trade or a skill set under their belt and be able to hit the ground running and to be able to provide for themselves as well as their loved ones.
I want to go back to something that was said last night during our live coverage. The chairman of the local Republicans, Patrick Riley, was looking at turnout numbers. And Assemblymember, you talk about, you know, making sure that New York State is serving the Big Five school districts, serving constituents who need it the most. Well, Patrick Riley was pointing to turnout data and saying, in his words, inner city voters in Rochester didn't really turn out and don't feel motivated by politics. I haven't seen the final numbers. I don't know if his characterization is exactly correct. Are you worried about political engagement? Are you worried about people in certain zip codes who just feel left out, not engaged, whether it's by politics, whether it's by services that they need? What do you make of all that?
Yeah, I think it can be, and it has been a challenge. When you have systems in place historically, and that's something that we brought to the table as a delegation, making demands, stating that when we have these major capital projects in these communities, in some of the more disadvantaged zip codes, we have to be and we must be intentional in assuring that individuals from those zip codes have an opportunity to generate wealth from those projects. So to create a new housing development and say, hey, here's some mixed income housing or here's some low income housing, be happy with it. No, we're not just happy with being provided with that. We want to play a part and take a part in building. Therefore, we're building our history and we're building legacy and also generating wealth to provide for our families.
Last question. I was warned by Congressman Joe Morelli. He says it's too early to figure everything out from what an election means and what all the lessons are and what to do differently next time. And I take that point. I mean, I really do. We still need all the votes counted to see what all the official numbers are. We have to see what the data is demographically. I take that point. But I do wonder if you will emerge from 2024 and say, if we have only learned one thing as a party, it is this going forward. Is there something that stands out in that category already for you?
I can't say if there's something in particular at this point. But one thing I'll leave you with is, in my role, I mean, we're, expected and we push and we advocate for policy and resources. And, something that I truly believe that we all must be intentional in doing that has absolutely zero fiscal implication, meaning it doesn't cost us a thing, but as a people, let's be intentional in speaking life into one another. Let's encourage one another. Let's encourage our peers. Let's encourage our children. But let's just be intentional to speak life into one another, because the truth is, we don't know what someone may be going through, and just a couple of positive words may inspire them or give them the motivation they need to make it to the next day.
Assemblymember Damon Meeks, who won a dominant reelection campaign, defeated Marcus C. Williams by almost 40 points. Thank you for being generous with your time and being with us, and I look forward to the next conversation.
Thanks, Evan. Take care.
All right, listeners, as we wrap up here, a couple of notes from me. I know everyone is feeling a lot of different emotions. You might be feeling elated. Maybe you haven't slept. Maybe it's been an all-night party. Maybe you feel despair and you feel crushed in a certain way or just absolutely drained. whatever you are feeling, I hope that you will find on this program going forward an open forum for ideas, for conversation, for understanding one another, and a chance to be constructive. And we want to hear from you. What are the kinds of conversations coming out of this election that you want to hear us address? You can email the program connections@wxxi.org to find us. There's a pitch form, I think, on the website that you can use as well if you've got very specific ideas about who you want to see on this program. And we've been hearing from a lot of folks today about that. We're working on that. We're going to work on that as we always do going forward. And what we want to be is the place where no matter what is happening in the world, no matter how good you feel about it, no matter how much despair you feel, you can find in this program a calm and constructive way to air out ideas and your thoughts. That will not change. Thank you to all of the elected leaders who joined us on this program these 2 hours. And we will continue with a lot more of that tomorrow and a lot more to come in the weeks and months ahead. So much love wherever you are. Thank you for listening. And from the whole team at Connections, we'll be back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.